Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. The University of New Mexico has been engaged in research around psychedelic compounds since the early 1990s, when Dr. Rick Strassman, with the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, studied psilocybin and DMT, the active ingredient in ayahuasca. More recently, a study in which UNM played a major role found promising results from psilocybin-assisted therapy helping people overcome alcohol use disorder. That's something we covered here in 2022. UNM researchers are continuing this work, including Dr. Larry Lehman, a professor in the departments of family and community medicine who also directs the Milagro program, which helps people overcome addiction during pregnancy. He has been a guest before on this program, along with Dr. Snehal Bhatt, chief of the Division of Addictions Psychiatry, to talk about psychedelic therapy. We recorded this on Friday, August 9th, and since then, the Food and Drug Administration has declined to approve MDMA for treating PTSD. That is a compound that Dr. Lehman uses in his research. I asked him why he was interested in this field.
My interest is really comes from my work in trauma and addiction, really looking at the idea that although we were treating addiction, well, we're initially getting at the roots of trauma. So my initial project that we started up that was working with MDMA for people who recently have had childbirth and have PTSD and opioid use disorder. And so that study's gotten going, earlier in the year. We're now starting to enroll our third person for it. And that's actually doing a series of MDMA sessions, people who've had babies in the last year, and seeing how does treating the PTSD affect both the attachment with the baby and chance of reusing. So that's been my initial foray into working in psychedelic medicine. But as I did this, I got trained in psychedelic assisted therapy and research, and so now we're expanding to some additional studies that are looking at the areas of depression as well as planning for other studies on addiction.
Can you tell me more about the sessions? Do they just do this for a couple sessions? How does this work?
They have three preparatory sessions before the first MDMA-assisted session. The MDMA-assisted sessions are about 6 hours. They're with us more in the room, and they actually stay overnight for those. So they do an MDMA session. During those sessions, they're what we've described as like patient-directed. I mean, we're not like asking them about their trauma, but what tends to happen when you have serious trauma and you do MDMA, which takes a lot of the trauma activation pathways offline, is that you naturally talk about the trauma.
As we record this, the Food and Drug Administration is deciding whether to allow MDMA as a mainstream medical treatment. How might the decision, whatever way it goes, affect your ongoing research?
I think regardless, it's probably not going to affect our ongoing research. This is sort of done as an FDA-approved study within what's called an investigational new drug.
Well, I imagine some of the people you're working with, even though it's focused on opioid use disorder, probably have some elements of PTSD if they have trauma, right?
Well, I should be clear. Everybody in our study has PTSD and opioid use disorder. They have the two of them.
Okay. Dr. Lehman, you have two new studies coming up. The first is related to postpartum depression and using psilocybin. Talk about that.
It's actually a postpartum depression and actually a novel psychedelic that's related to psilocybin. It's not actually psilocybin. It's something that's injected and breaks down in the bloodstream to psilocin, which is the same thing that psilocybin is metabolized to. So it's very similar effects, but shorter acting. It has a peak in about 2 hours, and the effects are gone by about 3 hours. And so the idea is that this may be advantageous to a couple of different populations. This study is for postpartum people, and there's sort of obvious reasons why they might benefit from a shorter session, due to, parenting issues. There's also, I think, going to be a study with the same medication for people with issues involving terminal illness and death and dying, and so they may benefit from something shorter than psilocybin. This study is for people who are postpartum and meet the criteria for major depression. They can be diagnosed either during pregnancy, anytime after 14 weeks, or up to 4 weeks postpartum is when they had to have developed the depression. They can be all the way through 11 months up to the first year postpartum, as long as they had the start of it during pregnancy or that period. I'm really excited about this. For some of the same issues I'm excited about the potential for MDMA for postpartum opioid use is that we're dealing with a very special time in a person, a mother's life, and a baby's life as well. And our current treatments for postpartum depression tend to take, you know, weeks, sometimes to months to work, whether they're medication or therapy. If, and this is an if, it's a study, so we don't know yet until we do it, but if this medication does show benefit, it would likely be similar to psilocybin, where that benefit, you know, is noted within days to the first week or so. And so that could be really advantageous to people that have a young child at home. And sometimes that, you know, that can affect bonding and attachment and other issues. So, you know, in general, we're trying to create a lot of our own studies, but this one, I heard that it was going on and they contacted me and I was like, oh, that would be a really good fit for us. That was just starting up. We're actually literally today is doing the screen for our first person who appears to be eligible. And we're anticipating the first dosing session near the end of the month. And there are some things just to mention to people that because there's no evidence about safety of the chemical we're using or psilocybin with breastfeeding, this has to be with people who finished breastfeeding, so that does limit it in some people. People can be on certain antidepressants as long as they've been stable for the last 30 days.
Who is leading the study?
So it's called the Reconnect study. It's by Reunion Neuroscience. I would say it's not big pharma. It's small pharma. It's a small company with that's everybody, kind of all the people I think fit in one room when I met them. And they're particularly focused on this agent, both for postpartum depression and for end of life. So it feels like a good partner, you know, for us to be working with.
What is the name of the agent?
RE-104 is what it's called. It's like a prodrug of hydroxy-DPT. DPT, some people have probably heard of DMT. It's in the same family as DMT, but it's longer acting. And it's an injectable agent that breaks down in the bloodstream.
What is it about this particular substance that makes it a good candidate for using it to treat postpartum depression?
What I'm saying is really based on psilocybin because that's what we have the most studies. And there's a chemical way that it works. It works, you know, pretty directly on one of the serotonin receptors in the brain. It seems to increase the connectivity between the neurons in different parts of the brain. You know, has an effect that causes relaxation of something called a default mind network. May have the effect of what we call neuroplasticity afterwards, sort of some of those increased connections may continue. How does that look at on a psychological level? They help with things what we call rumination, where we tend to be in, and this happens to all of us, you know, where we wind up thinking about things over and over again. And that can reflect in different ways. It can become anxiety when it's the thoughts about the future. It can become, you know, sort of depression with when it's thoughts about current life or different things. It can become OCD. And so I think it affects some of that process of rumination. It may also kind of bring people more to what's called like a pivotal life experience, and that may affect that. In studies that are being shown, people were looking at how does this relate to challenging experiences that occur during the sessions? How does this relate to what people call mystical experiences? And so we're using both of those studies. We're going to be looking at challenging experiences and looking at mystical experiences so that if there is benefit, we'll be able to see what part of the psychological processes are helped by that.
How would it work or be administered?
We have a session room at the UNM ISUBI building in North Campus, and people get an injection. Now, this one is a randomized controlled trial. Before we can really use these medications, we need to compare them to placebo. So people either get the active medication or they get a lower dose of the medication that may not be active. So it's not a pure placebo, but it's a lower dose. They get that injection. The effects come on within a few minutes of that. They'll be in the room, you know, experiencing that for about 3 hours. They'll stay with us for the day. They don't have to stay overnight like the MDMA study, but they'll be there during the day. When we think that it's safe for people to go home, they'll be able to go home. We have a whole checklist. There's what we call preparation and integration sessions. So two preparation sessions, two integration sessions. The outcomes of this study are very different from the ones that if we talk a little bit later about psilocybin for major depression. People are just being followed up to about a month or so. So this is looking for more immediate positive outcomes. I think there's two reasons for that. One, this is what's called a phase two study, so they're usually shorter term. If it does show benefit and of course safety, then they'll be looking at longer term outcomes. But I think we're also very interested in short-term outcomes of postpartum depression for some of the reasons I mentioned before. It's just a different scenario than the person that's had, you know, major depression for years, and, you know, whether you have improvement in a week or 2 months, maybe less of an issue as far as the timing here, anything we can do to help people with a more rapid improvement. So that's the theory of why this may be a good agent for this condition.
This is University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm speaking with Dr. Larry Lehman about his research on psychedelic-assisted therapies. He's a professor in the departments of family and community medicine, who also leads the Milagro program that helps people overcome addiction during pregnancy. There's another study you're participating in called the You Aspire that is focused on people with major depressive disorder.
Yeah. The U-Aspire is what we call a phase three study. So there's three different phases. Like the MDMA one I mentioned is a phase two. The RE-104 Reconnect is phase two. This is a phase three. So it's at the level right before you, if you have promising results, people can go to the FDA for approval. It's looking at people that have had major depression for at least a 60-day period. There's a lot of reasons why I think this is an exciting study. One is it does look at longer-term outcomes. People are followed for a whole year. Most studies of psychedelic-assisted therapies have followed people for 3 to 6 months, so that's useful. It's also interesting in that even though the initial dosing is randomized, it's randomized to psilocybin at the therapeutic dose at a lower dose or placebo. Once they get to 6 weeks, everybody is in what's called an open label study so that they will have the opportunity to do the therapeutic dose of psilocybin during that year. So we think that's beneficial for a couple of reasons. One thing people have realized is that if you're in a study for psilocybin and you strongly suspect that you got the placebo, not only don't you get any potential benefit, but you actually feel worse. The thought is that doing this method, we may decrease the incidence of that. What's also going to happen is that during the whole time frame, if people get improvement with the dose of psilocybin, then they have recurrence of symptoms, people can get up to 4 doses during the year. That's probably a more realistic future use if it is beneficial. There's definitely benefit from 1 dose of psilocybin in the phase two study so far, but the idea that it's one and done may not be actually the way it winds up working. People who've had depression, especially people have had it for 10, 20 years, there may have other things that they need to work out, whether in therapy or just to have another dose. It's even possible that people may need to intermittently have a dose of psilocybin. Again, these are very different than like antidepressants that are used, that people get a daily dose. And so these have been studied before with 1 dose or 2 doses. This one is sort of variable dosing, which, you know, may give us some inklings of how this could be used if it is approved.
How many participants will there be?
Yeah, so there's going to be 240 around the country. We're aiming to have between 15 and 20 people at our site. We have started recruiting. We actually have people scheduled for a session in a week or so, and we're, you know, actively taking applications. I want to share this with your listeners because there's a lot of limitations on who can be in the study. I mean, you have to be off of your antidepressants. And for a lot of people, that's just not a desirable or wise thing to do. For people that are on a single antidepressant, you know, being weaned off of that, even though it may take weeks or months, is much more feasible than if you're on multiple drugs. So that's one limitation. And for this study, this would be a great study for someone who's not started an antidepressant, wants this as sort of an option, or maybe is on their first antidepressant and it's not working and they want to try that. We can accept a small proportion of people with what's called treatment-resistant depression, meaning they've been tried on multiple antidepressants and they didn't show benefit, but it's only about 10%. And again, there's going to be some challenges in doing that because it may not be the best thing. We don't want to be destabilizing people, so they'll need to be in connection with their current mental health provider and make sure that that's a safe thing before they and we consider weaning. Other limitations can be just the usual things in other psychedelic therapies. You can't have some significant medical problems. You know, heart disease can be a limiting factor, uncontrolled hypertension, although well-controlled hypertension is okay. Unlike some of our studies that were focusing on substance use disorder would be a contraindication for this study.
Is this unusual where the placebo group would eventually get the actual drug?
It's being done more. I think that there's reasons it makes sense for this drug. Some of the issues, and I think you mentioned briefly the issues of the FDA with MDMA, and some of those are dealing with what's called functional unblinding. And let me just briefly explain what that is. That even though we blind people for these studies and they're random, if you do something like that has a major life experience or a major psychedelic experience, most people can actually guess what that is. Probably about 90% of the people can guess what it is. There's different effects that then get caused by what we call the functional unblinding. Let's say that you have a lot of expectancy about psilocybin helping you, and you decide that something, you've gotten something. So that expectancy may help you independently. It may accentuate what otherwise would be a placebo response. The opposite can happen too, though. If you had a lot of expectancy to get that, you have the negative effect, that can cause you to have worsening depression and could have a serious negative effects there. So we're hoping that by people knowing that they're in a study that goes for a year, that everyone will have the opportunity through that, if they're meet the criteria for depression, to have psilocybin, to decrease maybe both of those, maybe some of the expectancy and the negative placebo effects.
And you had mentioned as part of some of these therapies, is the reintegration. What is that and why is it important?
That's a great question. So one thing I want to mention, and I don't think that it's just the medication, although we don't know that. I think that most of us in the field think that this is psychedelic assisted therapy and that there's a role for the preparation, that there's a role for the integration. And that may be more so with some issues. It's probably quite prominent with addiction, which is a behavioral issue, but likely also exists for other things. And so the integration is where you share your experience with your two facilitators that were present with you. You talk about what you experienced. What are your insights? How is that affecting your life now? And that's what's called integration. It's not uncommon that people come out of these sessions with observations about their life, things that they want to alter. And so we're there for those sessions. That would be called integration. The preparation is getting to know people, creating a safe container where they know the people that are going to be with them, and just going over what's common, what's to be expected, what are, potential effects of psilocybin and the whole experience. So the preparation focuses on the experience, getting to know us, feeling safe. The integration is focuses on what did the experience mean to you, what's happening with you now.
That seems really important, which might not happen if you're using this recreationally.
Yeah, so yeah, we would not encourage people to hear that we're doing studies on major depression, get very depressed and go run out and try to purchase these on the street for numerous reasons. One is you don't know what you're going to get in that situation. It may not be the drug that you're thinking you're going to get. And also, we do think that it's really important that you have like a safe setting. And the actual therapy here is kind of what we call set and setting therapy. The set refers to your mindset and how you're doing that. The setting refers to the environment and who's with you and making it so it's safe. Those of us with some cultural history back from the 60s or 70s, you're familiar with concerns about people having, what we now call challenging experiences, but we're, sometimes called bad trips there. We don't call them bad trips now because actually it looks like the challenging experiences are actually, as long as you're supported in the right way during integration, seem to be associated with positive outcomes. So you sort of want to have the deep experiences, and those deep experiences can be challenging. But it's one thing if you have that in a room with therapists that are used to doing that. It's another if you're all by yourself, wandering around the San Dias. What we're doing is producing a safe set and setting to look at these.
You're listening to KUNM, and this is University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm speaking with Dr. Larry Lehman about his research on psychedelic-assisted therapies. He's a professor in the departments of family and community medicine, and he directs the Milagro program that helps people overcome addiction during pregnancy. Your colleague, Dr. Snehal, he could not be with us, but we spoke a couple of years ago about the work you both did on psilocybin-assisted therapy to help people overcome alcohol use disorder. Is that work still ongoing?
The study ended here. There's a hope and need that there can be some larger, maybe multi-site sort of studies, but there needs to be more what we call advanced phase 2 or phase 3 studies, and those currently are not scheduled for that. So, I would say, speaking for myself, and I know for Dr. Bhatt too, the results are extremely promising, and we hope that there will be funding that could come from NIH or other potential sources for that. Yeah, that was a really landmark study. Dr. Bhatt is a leading expert in working with psychedelic therapies for addiction, and I know he'll be excited at some point to talk to you about the next study that he's doing. I can just share a little bit.
Yeah, he's going to do a study with ketamine and methamphetamine use. Yeah.
Yeah, so methamphetamine, we have no, when we work with opioid use disorder, we have medicines that help, buprenorphine and methadone. We really don't for methamphetamine. So NIH actually had a panel a couple of years back, actually Dr. Bhatt and I both participated, looking to see what were promising agents. And they concluded that both ketamine and psilocybin had potential for methamphetamine use disorder. So this is going to be a study that's being done for that, specifically for people with methadone use disorder, people will receive an IV infusion. I'm not sure if there's an exact startup date. It's going to be some point in time later in 2024. We have a website that has information about all of our psychedelic studies.
Yeah, I'll put that on the web post for this episode of the show so people can find it at KUNM.org. Are you able to say why ketamine seems to be a promising therapy for methamphetamine addiction?
Ketamine is very interesting medicine. I mean, we think of it in different ways. It's been used as a medicine helping in anesthesia and pain management, for years. The most studied more recent indications are for major depression, where it's used as an IV medication with a series of sessions. But there's been ongoing research for addiction for more than a decade now. There's been research actually out of Russia that was looking for opioid use disorder that looked promising. There's studies in Columbia University looking at ketamine for cocaine, which is another stimulant. And so I think that's one of the reasons why there seemed to be benefit for potentially in stimulant use disorder. Ketamine is a very complex drug also. It has some very rapid short-term effects that we see for depression that are involved shifting of neurotransmitters. There appear to be longer term effects that may happen more from psychological change that happens. And there's always some accompanying therapy with the ketamine. Sometimes it's ketamine assisted psychotherapy, and that can actually be helpful. What happens during the sessions that helps with the therapy? The way I would best describe it is that ketamine has been described as a dissociative drug, and that certainly happens at higher doses. But even some of the lower doses, there's almost like a space between one and a person in their trauma. And so we know that trauma, for instance, and addiction are well linked. And so it may be that it works similar to some of the other substances, that by helping people get some space between them and their trauma, that they're able to process it, that issues that come up with more anxiety. But we're really at the beginning stages. So if this study is done, in addition to whether it works, there'll be studies of what factors seem to help for it, what is the timing of those effects.
Now, I'm guessing some people might be saying, ketamine's been abused as a recreational drug. So is it odd that it would then be used to treat addiction for another recreational drug?
That is a question that comes up with ketamine that's not really an issue with psilocybin or MDMA. What I can say is that the use of ketamine in a research setting like this has not been associated with the development of ketamine use disorder. And so it seems to be different here, that we're here is being used in a way to being helpful. Certainly there'll be different indications. If somebody has a history of ketamine use abuse, they're not going to be in the study. And people will need to be watched. But the idea is that when you're using a medicine in a research in a medical session, the hope is that, and so far the evidence is that ketamine doesn't lead to ketamine dependence.
And Dr. Lehman, could you talk a little bit about the evolving legal and regulatory landscape around psychedelics as therapy? Because we first talked like 2 years ago, and it seems like it's just continually evolving.
No, a lot's happening. We've been really happy to be able to get our studies up here going for people in New Mexico. And things are happening in different states. And Oregon is actually have a legal pathway for people to use in what they call service centers, and that can be for therapeutic or more just personal exploration reasons. Colorado is in the midst of setting up its own program. that's going to be able to be used, and there's going to be able to be used by, you know, healthcare providers, facilitators. That's still in creation, but there, you know, people are doing, it's being used right now, but all the guidelines and such are still coming out over the year. There's been an interest in New Mexico. People may be familiar that there's a bill that passed called Senate Memorial 12 that called on the Department of Health and the University of New Mexico to have discussions about, you know, research and to explore things. And what I can say is there is ongoing discussions with DOH. There's interest in different parts of the state politically and legislature-wise at looking at the potential. What I would say here would be somewhat speculative, but I would say that from speaking to people in New Mexico, I think the primary interest here is more how can it be used therapeutically, as opposed to, I haven't really heard anyone that's advocating for just a pure legalization or decriminalization. Does have advocates, but it's sort of different than looking at it for therapy. So I think the next step, and this is sort of based on what that bill called for, would be looking at, are there ways to take some of the research that's happened with psilocybin, the chemical, and could psilocybin, the mushroom, which is a different product, be used for substance use disorders, depression. And so there's going to be ongoing discussion. I expect this will be come up during the legislative and such sessions, but I don't have much more to share other than that there certainly is a lot of interest in the state, and that bill passed unanimously. So I think there is political support, but, you know, what form that takes is to be seen.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Dr. Lehman?
No, just Megan, just it's always a pleasure to come on and interview. I just want to sort of just share that we're, you know, one thing that people have been asking us for years, isn't there anything we can do here to be part of the research studies? And so I'm just really happy now that we have three studies up and going, you know, and that we have the one for ketamine, that people, you know, no longer have to say, well, I wish I lived in Baltimore, I wish I lived in New York, I wish I lived here, that there is an option for people to be involved in them. And then just, you know, my usual cautions that this is research. We don't know what's going to be beneficial. It's done in a safe environment, and that, you know, we're really committed at the university to rigorous scientific research that can be done in a safe way.
Okay. Well, Dr. Larry Lehman, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks, Megan. It's been a pleasure.
That was Dr. Larry Lehman, a professor in the Departments of Family and Community Medicine, who also directs the Milagro program at UNM. You can find more about studies he and Dr. Snehal Bhatt are currently conducting and how you could be involved at kunm.org. That's also where you can hear this interview again and find all of our interviews. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwinner for our theme music. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to University Showcase.